You know, one of the things we have in our society is we have males who keep trying to figure out how to prove themselves as men. One of the things I used to like to do when I was a boy was destroy things in high school, whether it's M80s and mailboxes or baseball bats to them or overdrinking and, you know, puking or whatever it was. It was a way to try to tell myself in some weird and false way and others that I'm a man. This is a part of our crisis in masculinity. So as we end our series today, we're going to look at what it means to have the final mark of man, which is having a vision, and also have it be cemented for you in your own mind. Let's pray before we go any further. God, thank you that you've blessed us, you've done a good thing in us, and you're still doing a good thing on us. Take us to new places today and help the words that come out of my mouth to be helpful to every heart and every mind in here, and most importantly, that they would please you and be in alignment with your truth. And I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. I mean, the need to feel like you're a man, it seems like it never goes away. It seems like we keep trying to prove ourselves. Some of us try to prove it by, you know, the stack of digits we have in our account, or try to prove it by the biceps we have. I mean, I know for myself, I'm around other pastors. I'm trying to feel to myself, like, prove it by whose is bigger, church I'm talking about. And these things that just constantly go through our mind. Men have to be solid in who they are and have their actions come out of it. So our last time, just talk with men. And by the way, let's give the ladies a hand for hanging in here for 6 weeks. Ladies, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I got an anonymous letter from a woman this last week. It's worth sharing. Check it out. Dear Brian, my son and I were leaving the 11:45 service last Sunday. When we were pulling out of our parking space, we had a flat tire. We drove a 76 Comet. I managed to get the car parked at AutoZone by their dumpster, and two men from Crossroads pulled up and asked if we needed help. We did not have a spare tire, so the one man went into AutoZone and bought the can of Flat Fix. As he was putting it in the tire, it was leaking out at the bottom. When they turned the tire, they said the tire was dry rotted. I told them that I would have to call a tow truck, and they said, no, don't do that. It would be very expensive. They said, we'll take the tire off and buy you a new tire. I started crying. They left, and about an hour later, they were back with the new tire. They said, sorry we took so long, but everything was closed, and we had to go to Kenwood. As one man was putting the tire on, the other man said to me, you know, when I saw you today at church, God told me that I would be helping you today. Then he said, God always tells us where he wants us to be. It's not always where we want to be, but it's where we should be. They would not give their name so I could write them a check. They saw our kids club t-shirts and said, that's the least they could do for us serving in kids club. They said we need to get off our butts and do something. I said, well, you sure got off your butts today. Please share. God bless you, two new men. You know who you are. Man, isn't that great? What happened? Why is that so heart-stirring? It's because they were declaring something, those men were. They were declaring something. They were being men, right? They were protecting. They were working. They were operating in a team context. And they took up a minority position, because I don't know how many other people drove by and didn't do anything. They took up a minority position. They're cementing something for themselves. Today, the last mark we're looking at to get us to be resolved in who we are and who we want to be is vision. Vision. Vision is a picture of where you want to go. And men have vision, and boys just live day to day. Boys think, what's the path of least resistance today? How can I enjoy my candy today? How can I have fun today? Men have a picture of where they want to go, and they put their eyes forward, and they go someplace. First George Bush said, some people say that I don't have vision. I don't see that. Vision is, that's a real live quote, seriously. Vision is, you just have a picture of where you want to go, and it's unique to you. Vision is unique. We're not talking about men have to have an appreciation of the commandments. Men need to have guiding principles. Men need to have, wise decisions. No, those are things that all people need to have. Vision is something that you are going to be about as a man. that's going to define your activities, it's going to define your checkbook, it's going to define your calendar, it's going to define your daydreaming. And when you do this, you'll trailblaze. And men are okay to trailblaze, and boys want to stay in the pack. And where's the pack? The pack is always on the well-worn path where everyone else is, where men say, no, I'm going to go in that direction, which means I have to do a little bit of trailblazing. At Crossroads, we have a vision. It's connecting seekers to a community of growing Christ followers who are changing the world. And no question, over 18 years, no question, the most criticism we've gotten have come from church people. It's always been the most criticism. Why is that? It's because church people like to be in a pack by themselves. Church people tend to want to be around people who have only the same beliefs as them. They want to be around people who have the same music taste. They want to be around people who have the same secondary doctrinal ideas. Church people tend to want to go in packs like that. And so when we said, no, we want to reach people who are not going to church, it meant we're going to have to trailblaze. It means I'm going to have to talk in a way that pastors don't talk. Because if guys wanted to go hear a pastor talk the way pastors normally talk, they would go. And guess what? They're not going. So I get criticized for illustrations or language I use because the vision is I want to talk with guys the way I would talk to them about Jesus if we were sitting in a bar. We get criticized for our music, our loudness of the music. It's because we want to be like something that a guy would experience at Riverbend. Anything that you will do that's a vision is going to have some criticism because boys aren't going to understand this. And this vision that you're going to have, it's going to be, I mean, it could be, you're going to trailblaze because you're going to be the first person in your family that gets an education. You're going to be the first, and you watch other people are going to go, what are you doing? Because they don't understand it. You might trailblaze, and there might be some vision. We're not talking about some vision that is going to cause someone to write a biography about you 20 years from now. It's just something that gives clarity. It could be, when I say I do, I'm going to do it for till the day I die. It's a vision. It could be I'm going to start a business. It could be I'm going, I have no idea what it is. But it needs to be something that's unique to you and sets you apart and gets you clear about why you're on this planet. And when you have this, it brings focus. Men focus. Men are able to focus on the future, and boys always leave their options open. You know, when you focus, it defines for you what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. If you have a vision, it clarifies things, where boys tend to not want a vision because they just want to have their options open for what could be a good thing for me to do today or this year. Now, the greatest man who ever lived was Jesus. He's also God that enabled him to be the greatest man. He's the greatest man who ever lived. And he had a vision. He had a vision. And his vision was to build us and to do something unique and powerful in us. After he was gone, in the book of Ephesians chapter 4, it talks a bit about him and his vision. Let's take a look at Ephesians chapter 4, which is where we get the title for this series. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk in the futility of their mind. Gentiles here are set apart in this context as being different from the nation of Israel. It's used as a moniker of immature, not spiritually with it. So in the vernacular of today's series, we could say, no longer walk as the rest of the boys walk in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who, being past feeling, have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. You've not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. That you put off the boy which grows corrupt. Now, in the purest sense, the truest sense of what this verse means, it's talking, here's a seminary word for you, in a salvific sense. It's talking from a point of salvation. And it's saying that all of us, by nature, are far from God. We're going after our own greediness. We're doing our own thing. And all of us have to come into a new realm. That is a realm of having a relationship with Jesus. When we come into relationship with Jesus, we have to put off the old self. We have to put off the old stuff that's been defining us, that all of us have normal, and we have to put on regularly the identity of Jesus and go about our day. And this is an illustration, it's a jumping off point to when I look at, we have to take off our boyish ways, our selfishness, our independence, our needing to take our ball and go home, not having a long-term plan. We need to take off our boyhood ways, and we need to put on our man ways. Every day we need to say, I'm going to be a man today, or I'm going to be a boy today, and this brings focus. Now, Jesus had crazy focus. He would say no to things, and he would say yes to things because of his focus. One of the more interesting ones for me was when he said no to a woman who was asking for help. I mean, shoot, what man says no to a woman who is asking for help? But he does, and he says this to her. He says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. She's a Gentile woman, and she's asking him to spiritually engage. He's like, you know what? I got to focus right now. Right now, my focus is my fellow Jews. That's what I'm doing. And she pushes back, and she says, well, she basically impressed him. I don't want to give the whole story right now. She impressed him, and he says, that's a good one. Okay, got it. I'm going to meet your needs right now. But we see just in the statement that, hey, I got to focus. It's the nation of Israel right now. Whenever you focus, someone is going to be threatened because you're not focusing on them. Whenever you focus on something that's out in the distance, something is going to not be done that someone else would want you to be done. I'm not trying to get anybody to have a four-sentence plaque that you put on your wall as a vision statement. If you want to do that, great. That could be fine. I'm not trying to formalize a process by which you have a plaque on your office wall. I've never done that. If I had done it, I would have thrown it away and made about three or four different ones because I've had a variety of different visions. We're not talking about having a vision that comes down from God where it's like the stone tablets off of Mount Sinai. It's inerrant and it doesn't change. It can be tweaked and be adjusted. It just means that today I have to say, what is it today that I'm focusing on that is going to give me long-term benefit? Do I know why I'm saying yes to certain things and saying no to other things? And our society does not want men to focus. I mean, just look at beer commercials. We're always adolescents in beer commercials. We're always acting boyish in a way that it's... In fact, what's a man you can identify in popular media that's shown to have a vision and is focusing? They're very, very rare to find. Our society wants us to stay boys. It wants us to just enjoy today and be immature and not have a purpose just like everybody else. Vision isn't about just having a good day today. It's about seeing the long term. Vision is about the long term, and men think long term. Boys live for today. Men think the long haul. Boys live for today. Jesus tweaked his vision statement a little bit another time in the book of Luke. He says this, the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. That's what I do. I seek and I save that which is lost. In other words, you and I are a part of his vision to seek and save us, to get us in relationship with God. You know what's interesting about Jesus? There's no historian worth his salt that wouldn't agree the most impactful man in the history of the world is Jesus. I don't care if you're atheist, I don't care if you're Buddhist, I don't care. No question, the most impactful man in the history of the world is Jesus. No one's impacted history more than him. No one has set in motion more good things than him. No one absolutely. And yet, when he died, he looked like an abject failure. I mean, think about it. He goes to the cross, and all the people who are gathering around him with his seminars, with his teaching, all that stuff, they're gone. His closest friends, they're all gone. People cynics keep thinking that Jesus wasn't really the Son of God. He was actually a zealot. He was trying to lead a revolution against the nation of Rome. He wasn't. There's no data of that whatsoever. And yet, even if that is true, he failed miserably at it. The nation of Israel wasn't different in its relationship with Rome as a result of anything. Well, he was a total failure. It seems so in the immediate sense. But Jesus wasn't playing for the immediate. He wasn't playing for 33 years. He was playing for long-haul vision. He was playing for people in Cincinnati in 2014. He was playing for people in Bangladesh in the year 1050. He was playing on a high stakes to get you and I to be able to get to God, to have our sins forgiven, to go through pain and discomfort on his end so we could have something on the other end, long term. And whenever I see something long term, it inspires me as a man. I read a book a number of years ago I sent out to a bunch of people. It's called God and Guinness. It's a great book. It's about a man. His name is Arthur Guinness. He founded Guinness. And it's fascinating now when I say this, the sales of Guinness are going to spike around the city because it's a pretty interesting story. He was just noticing that men were acting like boys. Older males were acting like boys. They were getting drunk. They weren't taking care of their families because their only option was Irish whiskey and hard alcohol. And he realized he didn't want to start a war that he couldn't win. Men never start a war they can't win. The idea of saying, hey, well, men just shouldn't drink. They should just stop drinking. That's not an attainable objective that most men want to attain. So he said, instead, I need to create some alcoholic drink where someone could have a lot more ounces and not get drunk. They could bond with others and they could have more ounces. So Guinness beer was invented. It was out of that. He was a believer. He was a follower of Jesus. And this was his desire. Now, the fascinating thing is, he not only saw that as a vision that people were criticizing him, some people would criticize him for, he also had a vision for his family that would be blessed by this business after his death. He enters into a lease, a 9,000-year lease. He pays 100 pounds up front, that's $147, and agrees to pay 45 pounds a year, or 66 United States dollars a year. And that factory is still standing and producing beer today. It's been bought out by corporate takeover. They've sold it to a larger corporate entity not too long ago. But at the time, people thought, what are you doing a 9,000-year lease? That's a lot of money for that. He had a long vision. He said, this gives me water rights for the beer and everything else. It inspires me. It always does. We're inspired by men. We're never inspired by somebody who has a good day. We're inspired by people who have vision that dictates their decisions. And whenever something moves me like that book or a movie, it's because there's something about the character of God that's made evident. One movie that is popular for all of us who are probably over 40, it's called The Dead Poets Society, and this is my favorite scene from that movie. One of the things you do to go from being a boy to a man is you seize today to make your life extraordinary. You seize the day for a vision that's off into the future, as opposed to what boys do today is hashtag YOLO. You only live once. You only live once, so I'm going to do whatever I can that makes my rocks bring joy today. I'm just going to, you only live once, whatever gives me fun today. Well, what is, you only live once? Well, wow, that's a great vision. You only live once. So take the path of least resistance, go after every amount of pleasure you can afford and do today, instead of seizing the day for a vision that lasts and is in the future. And of course, why do more of us not do that? Because it's hard, that's why. Vision is hard. It's difficult. It's always easier to just walk through a default open door, but men push through barriers. Men push through barriers, and boys just go through open doors. Oh, open door. Oh, my God. Open door. I guess I don't. What job am I going to take? Oh, that one has no. I'll just take that job. Open door. Oh, well, you know what? She said I could do X, Y, Z with her. Said, oh, open door. I just kind of walked through that open door. Oh, well, that's not vision. Vision is about difficulty. It's always difficulty. Vision is about something that isn't going very well, and it's not going well, so other people have given up on it, but you are going to do it differently. You're going to go forward. As a friend of mine says, if it was easy, they would send a dog with a note. But it's not. It's vision, and it always requires leaning into things. I don't know why. It's so weird how we have this brand of spirituality that this is like sugary pop spirituality. It has these stupid concepts that are nowhere in the life of Jesus and nowhere in the Bible, such as, if God's involved with it, it's going to be easy and it'll all come to pass. No, it won't. You don't see that in the Bible at all. You don't see God just, oh, open doors. Oh, wonderful. Open doors, Nehemiah says, oh, easy to build a wall around Jerusalem. No, you don't see that. Oh, open door, easy. I'm just going to take a missionary journey and have no problems and pains. No, you see shipwrecks. Oh, open door, interesting. In fact, the New Testament says, an open door was given to me for suffering. That's the open door. Oh, open door, oh, easy. No, you don't see. Everything that's significant you see in the Bible are people leaning in and pushing things. And boys don't want to lean in. They don't want to push. They want things to just be handed to them. They want the government to give it to them. They want their parents to give it to them. They want their employer to just kind of give them automatic forever pay raises. They just want open doors that they'll have to walk through. No, vision doesn't work that way. It's rough and it's difficult. Jesus got into intense vision mode. He went to a new level when people saw it on his countenance in Luke chapter 9. It says his face was set towards Jerusalem. What's in Jerusalem? The place is waiting where he is going to be crucified, where he is going to be killed. And it ties into Isaiah 57 that no question he had thought about many times. It says, I've set my face like flint. It's like all of a sudden people around him saw, oh my goodness, there's a look that just came over the dude's face. It was just a look of, I know my purpose. I know where I'm going. I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm set. It was just this countenance that came over him. Because he knew it would be difficult. It's crazy how you keep thinking things are going to get easier, and they tend just not to get easier. The family challenges get different. They don't get easier. The work challenges get larger. What we're trying to do here at Crossroads is to have a wider infrastructure to bless the city, and our first site was Crossroads Oakley, second site was Mason, second site was Florence, second site was, our fourth site was Westside. And we think our fifth site is going to be somewhere in the UC campus Clifton area. And so we thought we had a good rental place we could rent, and that fell through. And now we're looking at this place we might be able to buy. It could be awesome, but it's more money than we want to do initially. And you can stand up going, gosh, does it always have to be this hard? God, does it have to always? I mean, shouldn't your work every once in a while be like tipping over dominoes? Shouldn't it be like, no, it doesn't. It never is. No work a man goes about doing, no vision is ever going to naturally fall together. One of the greatest vision statements has impacted our country is the Declaration of Independence, where we see our founders had a long-term vision and they leaned into pushing through the barrier. The last lines of the Declaration of Independence says, and for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. They weren't making a decision that was going to make the next few months of their lives easier. They were making a decision they knew wasn't going to make the next couple years of their lives easier. They were making a decision that was going to bring great pain on their lives on the front end, and it was because of a long-term goal that all of us now are being blessed for. And it's called the Declaration of Independence because they basically were declaring the vision. They were setting themselves, and when you have a vision, you have to declare it. You have to state it. It has to be cemented in your mind and others. Men declare, and boys drift. When you declare yourself, it tells other people, you can expect these things from me, and other things you cannot expect them from me. When you declare yourself that way, boys don't want to declare themselves. They don't want to declare who they're voting for. They don't want to declare what they want to be when they grow up. They don't want to declare, I want to marry you. They'd much rather just keep living with you. They don't want to declare where they want to be in 10 years. They just drift. Relationship to relationship, job to job, thing to thing, path of least resistance. But boys or men, declare. Declare. Jesus needed this. He needed this. One of the more heart moving stories out of his life for me comes from the book of Matthew. Actually, it's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And it's the time where he comes before God and he is declared. He is declared. Take a look at it. Behold, a voice from heaven said, this is my beloved Son with whom I'm well pleased. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. How would it feel to have your heavenly Father say, this is my Son in whom I'm well pleased? This declaring moment of affirmation is followed by intense vision focus, days of temptation, teaching, abuse, and beating. And he was declared, and this is important to him. One of the more intriguing verses in the New Testament has always been to me that Jesus grew in wisdom and stature. Now, obviously, he grew in physical stature. I mean, thankfully, Mary didn't want to pop 165 pounds out of her birth canal. You know, that's so we all agree with that, obviously that. But what's it mean for him to grow in wisdom? It means that while he always kept the Ten Commandments because he was always without sin, he had to learn the Ten Commandments. It means that at age 5, I don't think he knew he was the Son of God. It means at age 8, he didn't have a picture of going to the cross. He grew in awareness of the vision that God had for him. He grew in these things. And so this thing, when he got baptized and he got declared, this wasn't like check the box, oh, I had to do that. This for him, I believe, was a life key moment. We don't see until this moment any teaching. We don't see any miracles in his life. He's declared. This is one of the major issues that we have in our society is how do we know a male is declared to be a man? How do we know that? Part of it is our actions. We had a person who sent me an email. I've never met this last week. He's declaring himself with his email and what he's been doing. It's actually a pretty cool email. Let me share it with you. He says, just 2 days after the first new man message, when I asked my fiance to marry me sooner, I knew I had been making strides to be a better man. We drew a line in the sand and set a date, and with this came the sacrifice of celibacy. Although we've lived together prior, our financial obligation makes it difficult to separate. We took this vow serious as an act of our faith and our commitment to each other and God. Now, this wasn't the only impact the new man message delivered. It changed me. I began to see things clearer, to hear things. I came into contact with a young woman. She was seen coming out of the woods with a young male. By the way, this is a cop over on the west side who's writing this. She was seen coming out of the woods with a young male. I made contact and received the story that they were out of gas and were in need of a ride home, and I requested that I pat them down prior to them getting into my vehicle for my safety. Neither had anything on their person, and I asked the young lady as she got into my car if I could check her purse. When I did, I found her works, needle, spoon, tourniquet. I placed her in custody and separated her from the male, and once she was in my car, she said, "This has to be a sign. I shouldn't be here." And this is immediately when the words, "sometimes you have to be in the minority," ran through my head. Thanks, God, trying to make an arrest here. She began to tell me that this guy she was with was recently let out of jail after 9 months. And during those 9 months, she had began to reconstruct her life and had stayed away from heroin. I asked if she had used tonight, and she said, "No, it's like you're an angel." Okay, got it. Next slide. I sent the male on his way. Funny, he didn't seem to care, nor did he walk towards his house or vehicle that ran out of gas. Why? Because he was a boy. You can be a hardened person in prison, but be a boy. We moved down the road, and we talked more, and as I wrote out her summons, she stated she never wanted to use again, but it was all she knew. I told her that she was a follower of people and had to find a new direction. She also told me that her grandfather watched over her and that she's attended church on occasions, but she hasn't found one that has really impacted her. Okay, got it. So I took a shot. I told her about Crossroads and invited her and her grandfather to come check it out. Now, mind you, I arrested her by order of summons, knowing darn well I've heard this before. Well, her grandfather responded to pick her up, but before they left, I told them I'd be out at the Westside Crossroads for the 11:30 service, and that I would get there early and wait for them. I further stated that I would do everything I can to find her help if she would show me that she wanted to help. Guess what? They showed up. Isn't that great? Great. He was declaring himself with every step that he took in the midst of that. And boys don't want to declare themselves. Boys don't even want to be men. They just want to be perpetual adolescents. And our culture keeps us as males in this in-between, it keeps us boys. Adolescence is just a continuation of boys. You realize the whole term adolescence wasn't invented until about 1880? In the history of maleness, all world, no one that had, there was this weird period where you could be an idiot and immature. Psychology Today, a while ago, wrote about this. They said, another way to look at it is that in centuries past, a sexually mature person, that's someone who could ejaculate, was never treated as a growing child. Today, sexually mature folks spend perhaps 6 years, ages 12 to 38, living under the authority of their parents. We have this thing, we mandate, we allow boyish behavior. Oh, you're just going through a hard time. Oh, you're just trying to find yourself. Oh, you know, this is new, especially to our society, to have it as extreme as it is. And what we need, what we don't have, what all ancient cultures had, was a way that boys could be declared that you're now a man. You've gone from being a boy to now being a man. And we have a cultural need for that in our country. Jesus had that declaration. There was something going on. He had that declaration. The Jews have the bar mitzvah, which was that originally, but it's kind of morphed away from that right now. Over in South Africa, they do this. It's one of the cool things about their culture. It's not done in a healthy way at all. They take all the boys. The witch doctor takes them up in the mountain. And they circumcise them. It's unhealthy. It causes the spread of AIDS, all that kind of stuff. It's not good, but I like the sentiment about the men going up, and we're going to now bring you into manhood. Other cultures, you kill a deer, and you drink the blood. You're a man. You go up a mountain, you bring back an eagle feather. You're a man. Other cultures, as odd as it sounds, the chief would have one homosexual act with you and cement, you're a man. Ethiopian boys of the Hamar tribe are expected to make a leap over a row of cattle. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is, but there should be something that defines it. Now, I started learning about this was long before I had a son, and I realized I've got to do something different because this is what I ate for. This is why I had stupid, immature behavior. I was trying to prove to myself and other people that I was a man. And so you have to set up for your son, if you have boys, you have to set this up for your son that there's going to be a time where you're going to declare him a man. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be you're going to suck a lollipop at a Reds game. You're going to tell him you're a man. Honestly, it doesn't matter what it is. You just have to tell him early on that when this happens, I'm going to declare you a man. So I did this with my son. I told him we're going to have a, we're going to go down south. We're going to pick up truck and we're going to drive it back. I'm going to tell you you're a man. My thought was, go down south, there's not salt in the roads, I can buy an old truck cheap, and I can do that. And then something changed, I got a newer pickup truck, and I wasn't going to have two trucks in my parking lot or in my driveway. So we altered it and adjusted a bit, and we did the ceremony where he was ushered into a man. I had a campfire of guys, I invited four guys around, and we brought them into the campfire, and I said, Jake, I've gathered these men representing men from all cultures and all time periods. We're here tonight to bring you into the fellowship of men. And I had each guy go through and give him words of what they've seen in him and give him a memento. And it came to me, I went through the five marks. Here's what I've seen in you. Here's how I've seen you do this mark. Here's how I've seen you do it. And then I gave him a Navy SEAL combat knife. I gave that to him. And then I put my hands on him. I looked him in the eye and I said, I declare you're a man. You are a man. I went through and I prayed on him. And it's the first time ever since I've seen him weep. It hit him in a significant and profound way. We need these sorts of things. Jack Donovan says this. Men cannot be men, much less good or heroic men, unless their actions have meaningful consequences to people they truly care about. Strength requires an opposing force. Courage requires risk. Mastery requires hard work. Honor requires accountability to other men. Without these things, we're little more than boys playing at being men. And there's no weekend retreat or mantra or half-assed rite of passage that can change that. A rite of passage must reflect a real change in status and responsibility for it to be anything more than theater. No reimagined manhood of convenience can hold its head high so long as the earth remains the tomb of our ancestors. It's not about just having a rite of passage, but there's unique changes in identity and status that come out of that. So when he came out of that, I said, you don't have a curfew. You don't have to ask me to use a vehicle. You can have beer in the house. You're 17. I hope you don't have a board member here telling me I'm going to get fired now. But I was like, I got to treat him like a man right now. If I'm going to call him into a man, I've got to now treat him like a man. He's got to have all the benefits of that within reason. Men always operate inside of it. And this is biblical. It's biblical. Abraham, when he has the vision to start the nation of Israel, he gets circumcised. It's a rite of passage, it's a declaration. The shepherd boy, David, when he becomes King David, he's anointed. The prophet Samuel anoints him with oil, puts his hands on. There's a rite of passage. He cements it. He's declared, okay, I'm no longer a shepherd boy. I'm a man. Simon gets a new name. He's declared when he says Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus says, you know what? I'm going to change your name to Peter because this is foundational. Every man craves for someone looking him in the eye and saying, you are a man. God has created that inside of us. And today we're going to do that for those who want to declare themselves as men. Not for those who want to nice little bow on the end of a series. Not for those who want to take away a crossroads memento. For those in here, you've been touched by God and you know that you need to declare yourself. We're going to have the fellowship of men that we pre-selected to come forward. They're going to be here at the front and they're going to be at the back at every level as well. And you're going to be able to go to them and they're going to give you one of these. It's a piece of barn wood. It stood the test of time until we tore down the barn so we could make these. It stood the test of time. It's gone through storms. It's gone through droughts. And we've printed on it the five marks of man. Men, why don't you go ahead and take your positions? Those of us who are going to participate in this ceremony, why don't we all take our positions? And so here's what you're going to do. If you want to declare yourself, if you've never had this done or you just know this is important to you, you're going to come forward. They're going to give you this, and you're not going to do this thing, oh, thank you. You're going to hold it up like this. You're going to hold it up. You're going to allow everyone to see who you are, and you're going to allow everyone to know, I'm willing to be taken notice, and I'm going to a new reality. I'm in a new reality. You're going to hold it up, and then those guys are going to put their hands on you. And men who are in the fellowship, just make sure we got this right. You're going to put your hands on them, and you're going to look them in the eyes. It's not like dainty little prayer time. Put your hand on them. Look him in the eye and say whatever you can remember that you should say. You're going to look at him. We're going to look at him. You're going to say, you are a man. And then you're going to be able to take a Sharpie. They'll be in one of the buckets up here if you'd like. Take it back to your seat and have people who you want to have seen witness it to go ahead and sign that. And then we're going to do something else after that. So let me pray for us right now. God, thank you for the series. Bring it to a close. And thank you that there's going to be more men in this church as a result of this series and a result of today. I pray you cement something unique in every man or every future man that comes today. Have your grace present. Amen.